Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. And my next guest, I am so excited to have him. Why? Well, economic disaster was averted this week as the major political player in Washington finally agreed on a deal to raise the debt ceiling. But were no lessons learned after the same type of situation downgraded by the country's credit rating in 2011? Why are our elected officials able to hold negotiations over the nation's financial solvency? One voice we turn to when politics make our brains hurt is David Schultz, professor. Hopefully, the Hamline University political science professor can ease our minds. He attempts to do that now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, and I hope you enjoyed a beautiful day today, too.
Oh, it was a beautiful day. Just perfect. I must say, sir, that we are really grateful that we have you as part of the knowledge that we need here in the great state of Minnesota. And when talking about politics, not just politics, but something as important as the debt ceiling, it is absolutely maddening for me to understand why do we keep having challenges with paying the debt ceiling, getting it done?
Well, first off, you're right. We shouldn't have a problem with it. For reasons I'll mention in a second here. But the reason why we're having a problem with it right now, or in the last, let's say, 20 years, it all goes back to something we've talked about before, just in an enormous divide that's emerged between the two parties, the polarization. But even more so, I'm going to say at this point, is that, and sometimes you have to call it the way it is, on the Republican side, there are extremists who are willing to hold the U.S. credit rating hostage to their agenda. And that's in part what I think was driving some of this here. Is think about it, how McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, to get his speakership for the Speaker of the House, basically had to almost sell his soul to a group of very, very conservative people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Bobbert, people like that. And they're the ones who were driving him to say, you've got to do X, Y, and Z. You've got to get commitments on cuts. You've got to do all kinds of stuff like that. So his precarious position was due to the polarization within his party and the extremists on the Republican side.
But why do we allow it to happen every year?
Okay, so this is a great question. Okay, so if we were to go back, let's say approximately, 80 years ago, we never had votes on the debt ceiling. And it wasn't until in the 1930s that Congress passed a law that said that we have to have Congress authorize the debt ceiling. And let me just sort of clarify a few different things here, because I think listeners are probably confused. Okay, so we have sort of two or three different concepts. We can have a debt. We can have a deficit in our spending every year. That's one thing that we might have. And then we will have what's called the national debt. That's how much money as a country we owe. The debt ceiling is related to both of those. So if we keep borrowing money, the amount of debt that we have goes up. And therefore, what the debt ceiling is about is to say, what's the maximum amount of money that we can pay or that we're obligated to pay? That's the debt ceiling. And it makes no sense. I mean, imagine you or I said, well, I borrowed a bunch of money. I've already spent it, but I'm not going to pay anymore. I've paid enough or something like that. But anyhow, it wasn't until the 1930s that Congress said there's got to be this thing called a debt ceiling to authorize how much money we can borrow to pay for our previous things that we purchased. And we basically, up until probably 20 years ago, never had fights over the debt ceiling. We got to the ceiling, we just increased it, no big deal. It's really the consequence of the polarization. I'm one of those people, and there's a few others out there who say either the debt ceiling is unconstitutional, it violates the 14th Amendment, or just repeal the law. Because if Congress has already allocated the money, if we're already told we have to spend it, of course we've got to pay it back, or we have to pay interest on it. That's the debt ceiling.
So then why do we have to have all of these challenges and problems? I am shocked at how it is handled, who we're borrowing from, I am concerned. Isn't it China where we get most of the money to borrow from?
We get a lot of money from China. That's probably the most principal one. I mean, from some of our allies, of course, like Great Britain and the Netherlands and so forth. But the largest chunk of our debt is purchased by China. And this is also, if we go back to, was it like 15 years ago when we had the mortgage crash, you know, when the banks, you know, kind of crashed back then, a lot of the secondary mortgage market in terms of holding of the mortgage is also China. And I don't want to get involved in China bashing whatsoever, you know, but yes, China holds an incredible amount of U.S. debt.
So we're really in this together. You know, some people believe that China is just, you know, it's our nemesis. At the same time, we're brothers and sisters at this point.
We are, because think of it also. They're also one of our, not our biggest, but one of our biggest trading partners. I mean, we're as consumers, hugely indebted to them for most of the clothing that we wear, a lot of the electronics, for anybody who's probably has a laptop, many cell phones, et cetera, are from China. But in turn, And so we're hugely dependent upon them for consumer goods, but they're also hugely dependent upon us. And the reason why that's important to think about here is, as you said it really well, brother, sister, I'm not sure what the right description is, but there ought to be more recognition of the interdependence that we have as two countries and ways of figuring out, given that interdependence economically, how can we work together. But instead, we've turned what ought to be an interdependent relationship into an adversarial relationship.
Yes, yes. That's dangerous for us. That is truly
dangerous
for the United States. So here we are looking at, once again, having to borrow money to pay our debt. We know that this is coming every year. Why are we not prepared for that? Or are we prepared and we just don't know what's really happening to the money?
Well, I think the answer is yes and yes to both of what you're asking here, is that there is a problem. You know, we keep spending more money than we take in. Now, we could talk about saying maybe we should increase taxes. Maybe we could talk about cutting spending. Maybe we should probably do a little bit of both or something like that. But the national debt keeps going up because we keep spending more than we take in. In short term, maybe that's okay. Maybe during the pandemic, which did inflate, you know, the our national debt. You know, we borrowed a lot of money because we had to get the country through, you know, a pretty serious pandemic. But like in the same way that an average household, you just can't keep spending more than you take in. At some point, we need to think about how do we, you know, get our finances back into line. Again, emergencies, understand, all of us have had to borrow in an emergency when something happens or something like that. But there's a longer term structural problem here regarding, again, how much we spend as a government versus how much we take in. And with it, of course, who do we tax, who do we don't tax, and so forth. I did a small piece about 2 months ago, just to sort of put something into perspective here. The 10 richest Americans are worth a total of $1
trillion. $1 trillion, that's right.
The bottom 50% of the American population doesn't even have $1 trillion. But these are individuals such as, like, you know, the Jeff Bezos and stuff like that. They hardly pay anything in taxes.
Elon Musk.
So, right. So we could have a great conversation about saying maybe we should be taxing more. Maybe we should also be spending less. Maybe we should be figuring out how to live within our means. Maybe we should be figuring out to say that, okay, we know that a rainy day is going to come again in a future point. How do we figure out and plan for that? So that's why when you asked those two questions before, we both are, as a society, we're not planning well, you know, for our spending, and we're not thinking about, how do we think for the future in terms of, you know, expenses that are going to come down the line.
Well, how do we plan is automatically what comes to my mind is leadership. Whomever is in power here in the great United States. That's where we're going to find out exactly who we are. Because many of these leaders, some of them are very capable of leading well, mm-hmm. making sure that all Americans get some piece of the rock, right? It could be a little piece or a big piece, but they get a piece. Today, we're not seeing that. So many are complaining and saying, why are we not doing solar more? Why aren't we doing this more? Why aren't I getting a bigger piece of this when so-and-so is getting a bigger piece and that person has a gigantic piece already? We can talk about this over and over and over again, yet we constantly get to the point of the debt ceiling. And I just don't understand why it's necessary. And by the way, can you tell us how Denmark, which is the only other country that has a debt ceiling, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. How do they do it? Do they do the process the same way we do?
They have far more political agreement on basics than we do. And yes, they have a different process in terms of how they automatically approve of raising their debt ceiling and so forth like that. So it's a very different process, but it's not like ours where we have to do essentially partisan votes every so often to raise the debt ceiling. I would also point out and say the fact that Denmark does not have the same problem that we do in terms of consistently spending more money than they take in.
Right. We had a debt ceiling crisis in 2011. And I'm just curious to know if you could share with us what that truly meant to the United States when it came to our bills, what we needed to pay, how we needed to pay it.
Well, a couple of things is that we got right on the brink, but what happened, two different things. One is that one credit agency downgraded us in terms of our credit rating. Anybody who's ever looked at their credit score, it's kind of like sort of the same idea. The most important thing that the United States has is its credit score. The dollar is the international currency in which everything, anywhere from oil to consumer goods, that is the basic currency of the world, and that's part of the United States' strength. You start to downgrade, you start to question the solvency of the dollar, you dramatically weaken the United States. Now, let's say, had we actually not raised the debt ceiling and ran out of money, essentially defaulted at that point, I mean, the United States would lack authorization to spend money. The most immediate consequences would have been, you know, as I proverbially say, grandma doesn't get her Social Security check. Many of the most basic functions in our society would grind to a halt because what? There would not be money to pay for those debts. And what's important to think about here is that Congress has already passed an appropriation bill. It has said, we're going to spend money on Social Security. We're going to spend money on Medicare, Medicaid. Why we have the debt ceiling makes no sense because Congress has already said we're going to spend the money, and to refuse to raise the debt ceiling is essentially saying, yeah, we decided to spend the money, we're obligated to do it, but we're just not going to do it. Again, when you're expressing the confusion, your confusion is well placed because the way we do it just does not make sense under the current structure.
And why is that? Why do others get to do that to us as a country?
Boy, that becomes like the million-dollar question here. Again, part of it becomes, at this point, a lot of posturing. I mean, I was positive we were going to eventually reach an agreement on the debt ceiling. But basically, we had to have Biden posture. We had to have McCarthy's posture. They had to play to the wings of their party to make it seem like I'm out there fighting. I'm doing the best job I can. I'm going to make sure that the other side doesn't get away with something. So a lot of it was just posturing. But because of, again, the polarization that we have and the fringes, you know, that we have developed in American politics, those fringes oftentimes get to drive the center of American politics.
Yeah, so that's a real problem. So the 1970s, before that, before the 1970s, we didn't have any debt ceiling crises, correct?
Correct.
Didn't it begin in like 90-something?
90-something was the first time, because up until then, it was just automatic in terms of approving it. And even, again, trying not to sound partisan, I mean, the debt ceiling was raised, what, two or three times, I think, by the Republicans when Trump was president. I'm forgetting the exact number of times there, you know, but it's we've never had this problem until like, let's say, the 21st century, when we had to raise it. It was just a non-controversial vote. It wasn't even really covered in the media. I mean, that's how non-controversial it was. Again, it is a product of the polarization that we really have in our society now. And it's as I tell people, it's the transformation of American politics, where we used to live in a bell curve society. Most voters were in the center. Most votes were in the center. Everybody agreed. We now live in a bimodal world where there are fewer centrists and more people on the extremes, and the extremes get to drive, unfortunately, American politics.
So the crisis of debt ceiling that just happened for us in 2023 means that if we don't make sure that it is done, then all of us will suffer.
Correct.
All of us will suffer in some way financially. So what do we have to do to change that? Can we cancel the debt ceiling and just make sure that the United States will absolutely pay their bills no matter what?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, think about what the bargain was that was struck. It's basically said, we're going to suspend the debt ceiling for 2 years. What would have been the better piece of legislation is just suspend the debt ceiling permanently. That's it. That's it. That's all we have to do. We could pass a law tomorrow that says there is no more authorization required for increasing the debt ceiling. Then it would put the focus on where we should have the focus. We can have a great discussion at that point regarding what? How much are we spending? How much are we taxing? What programs should we be funding? Things like that. That's where the focus should be. But we're using the debt ceiling, or some people are using the debt ceiling as a hostage for that. But yeah, literally, I would have been jumping up and down if the negotiation had said, permanently, we're getting rid of the debt ceiling requirement to vote to increase the debt ceiling. At any time, Congress could do that.
Can we switch it very quickly? Can we literally say, if everyone agrees, if the Congress agrees, and they say, okay, no more of this debt ceiling mess, let's get rid of it. Is it possible to get rid of it for everyone, especially since this Congress particularly is one of the richest Congress we've ever had?
Yeah, you could have done it. Okay, where you could have really have done it is last year, when the Democrats still controlled the House, still controlled the Senate, they could have done a vote back then through what's called a reconciliation bill, which is not subject to a filibuster. The Democrats back then could have just said, we are getting rid of the debt ceiling. It could be done anytime you can muster, you know, the requisite majorities in the House and the Senate, and the president sign all the stuff we learned in high school. How does a bill become a law? Two houses of Congress agree, the president signs. That's all it would take to get rid of the debt ceiling.
I think every one of us needs a new civic class to take, because we've all forgotten. We've all let it go, and we have got to stop letting it go. We have got to fight. That's what I say. It has been a pleasure always to talk with you, David Schultz, professor of the political science at Hamline University. You are a remarkable man, and we are grateful to have you. So thank you for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, and thank you to the audience.
All right, sir. You take care.
Right. Bye.